Hello and welcome to this month of Motorsport October edition. I'm Sean Smith and I'm joined by James Montgomery.
Well, hello there.
And a slightly delayed due to the internet, Sam Green.
Hello.
That was brilliant.
Oh, beautiful. Brilliant. Beautiful.
At least it seems to be consistently a bit delayed. So if we want to insert any jokes, which his answer is yes, then we can do that later on.
Fantastic.
October. Motorsport happened. We're going to talk about it 10 minutes on the clock for each one. So if you haven't listened before, you should do that. Right, first topic is the world of Le Mans. The Glickenhaus team have unfortunately decided to end their hypercar program, starting the clock. Samantha, that means that we, among a few others, mainly Italians, are the last people to see the Glickenhaus racing in anger on track, possibly.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. It's a very good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, we saw it last month, really, for Monza. Mm-hmm. And now that could be the last time that car is ever seen in public.
It's very sad.
I doubt it, but you never know.
Yeah, it's...
Well, it is, isn't it? It was a cool car. We've always liked the way it looked, and we've liked the ethos of trying to keep a small team like that able to do hypercar.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they are a very small team.
Our Ford and Glickenhaus have been said through the years. It's a lovely car. Let's say it's a small team, which we're happy to see. We need minnows in motorsports. However, as Alistair would repeatedly say, Glickenhaus have never helped themselves sometimes. So it's not the biggest surprise in the world.
No, I mean, the fact that they haven't made no attempts to develop that car at all since it started racing probably suggests that it wasn't going to do as well as they were hoping it was going to do when the likes of Ferrari start taking it pretty seriously, which clearly they have this year. And they've just slipped further and further behind the competition this year. Last season, as in 2022, they managed to get a pole position and they led some laps. This year they've not really been close, have they?
No, not really. It's a shame because it's a nice looking car, but looks don't equate to speed, and yeah, you're quite right, they needed the development on the car. And well, I mean, they've skipped the last few rounds now, and are they in for Bahrain this weekend?
No.
Well, there we go then. That's it. They can't get the sponsorship. Jim Clickenhouse has always been very open about that and said, if we can get the sponsorship, we'll continue. But I've not seen any title sponsors come nearby. And I don't know how much of that is to do with the lack of competitiveness in the car.
I don't know how much that has to do with
how loud the manager likes to speak and promise and never actually perform on track. But either way, no, the results haven't materialised, the funds haven't materialised, and this feels like an inevitable but sad end, frankly.
Devil's advocate here. Glickenhaus has obviously mentioned how the IMSA Championship have been less than helpful when it comes to allowing his car to race as a hypercar in the LMDHs, as the rules are meant to be. We don't know, obviously, what conversations have or haven't been taking place, or what deals have or haven't been said. But if it is true, then it's got to be a factor that he can't race an American car in the States, where presumably a lot of his money is going to be coming from.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. They are a very small American-based team, so the fact that they can't do IMSA, either with the current car or with a new car, is very tricky. And it's purely commercial reasons why they're not allowed to do that, which seems almost ridiculous, I'm not going to lie. I know that IMSA has rules around manufacturer backing and they have to have the right level of hospitality and things like that, but surely you've got to have some help
oh, no,
it, for those smaller companies, otherwise... Point.
it's a production issue, so the commercial aspect comes purely down to the production, because I believe IMSA regulations require that any participating manufacturer, it's like Group B days here, you need to produce like 2,500 versions of a car or something like that.
It's ridiculous, though, isn't it?
Which is tough, because how are you supposed to produce, well, mass produce 2,500 hypercars anyway? But that's another conversation. But yeah, I mean, I can understand why that would work for something like GTs, because they are supposed to be allegedly based off a road-going car anyway. But yeah, no, neither of them really wanted to make it work, which I think is the biggest issue. And it's a shame, because at the end of the day, the detriment is the field. So you've got a thinner field. It comes to the detriment of the quality of the racing, because you've got less cars on the track, which ultimately means the only people that are really suffering are the fans who want to watch the racing, and there are no cars to go and enjoy to watch.
Especially
including our fabled Minnows. Yeah, exactly. We all love a good Minardi, don't we?
I'll be completely open and honest here. As a Bicolors fan, as everyone knows, it's put me a lot more worried about their future. Because obviously they will be the only independent building their own car. So they haven't even got the competition of fighting Glickenhaus anymore. And the LMDH basically pay very little money to get a good car is going to make it a lot more difficult for them to get anything if they did manage to have the ability or funds to move closer to the pack.
Sean, yes. Don't forget about Van Wool.
They are by colours, but you know.
They can race themselves.
How many Van Wools do you see on the road, Monty?
Not enough.
It's. Well, there's a point. So, I don't know. It depends how well. Was it Azotta, Sam?
I think we may have lost to Sam.
Oh no, that's a disaster. We're only a few minutes
in. Disaster. Oh no.
Basically, the small Italian, Mark, who tested their car at Monza and planned to be in WC next year, it's the same for them. They're going to have a very limited market. And resultantly, it's going to be cheaper for teams to get a LMDH, you know, rebadged and limited chassis capacity than it is to either get a customer hypercar or build your own. It's a very unfortunate stance, I think.
It is. My problem is that the rules sound fantastic. It's provided some great racing so far this year, but it really does feel manufacturer dominated. And to me, it almost feels like F1 in the mid-2000s, late 2000s again, until all of them will throw a wobbly inevitably. When it doesn't fit their budgets anymore, now, this will be the first thing to go again.
Well, you could argue with WEC that it's just repeating the same problem they had last time.
Yep, I also agree with that one as well. It's
I'm sure the costs aren't as high as the old LMP1s, but you need to have competition and incentive to have a contest if you're going to attract anyone, regardless of if they're a manufacturer team buying, you know, either in hypercar or LMDH. Or a privateer/boutique manufacturer like Van Wall Bicolors or Glickenhaus or Azotta.
I think we need to get Koenigsegg in next year.
That won't happen.
I know. But you can still wish. You can still wish. We had Spyker in F1, so we can get Koenigsegg in WEC. There you are. I've called it first.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Thinking of the Glickenhaus itself. Jim Glickenhaus in his sort of his JPEGs basically saying what the team were leaving. He's mentioned a 7-figure sum that would be needed to take the car to a next level to allow it to compete better with the rest of the field. Do you foresee any way that a alternative mark? Maybe Alfa Romeo, because who have been sort of umming and ahhing about having a run at hypercar. Originally, that car was, of course, meant to have an Alfa Romeo engine. Do you think there's any way that they could take that as a running start rather than developing a ground-up car?
I guess if someone wants to adopt it, then yeah, why not? Because they've done the hard work. They've developed the car and built up from there. We've seen it plenty of times in the past where teams will essentially inherit someone's R&D and then turn it into their own car. So in theory, I can't see why not. I personally think it's going to be more than a seven figure. I think it's going to be closer to an eight figure mark, somewhere between
10 million.
50. I was going to go for 15 to 20 million just with looking at how much motorsport has become expensive in the last 18 months because of the cost of living and whatever else everyone else has been using as their excuse. The exact same products are literally twice the price of what they were this time last year. And that goes from club level racing all the way to the professional stuff. So I honestly believe if anyone wanted to take over Glickenhaus's package, they would need to invest at least 15 million euros in not sorting it out, but developing it. And that's not even a guarantee that that could make them competitive, because there could be an inherent flaw with the car's design anyway, that if you're spending that amount of money, you may as well just go, well, I'm just going to sell with a clean sheet of paper and do it my way.
Or buy a customer Ferrari if you are from there, for example.
Oh, yes. Oh, I mean, why not? It's a proven race winner. So why wouldn't you? That's how F1 used to be back in the day.
Yes. It's also how the original WEC was back in the 80s and 90s.
It was with Group C. Just buy a Porsche and go and race. Yes. Happy days.
And I, for one, don't want that. But we shall see. Thinking Sam's missing in action with his internet. Let's move on to topic number two, which, of course, Monty, is... Your event.
Yes, my karting event from a couple of weeks ago. Yes, and I have to say, Sean, thank you very much for coming along, and thank you for the wonderful photography work and supporting the whole event. I really do appreciate it.
That's right.
Why didn't you get in a kart, though?
So I could take pictures. It's quite difficult to drive a kart and take photos, isn't it?
That's multitasking. You've got to learn. Go to university, get a degree in the arts. BSc in multitasking. There we are. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'll see and how
just
as
we're
goes.
Bantering. Exactly. Just before I carry on, I think we've got a Sam who's just returned.
Wait for it.
Potentially.
Hello. Yeah. I think I'm back.
Still with a 5 second latency. Fantastic. So as Sam tries to get up to speed. Yeah, it's fine. It's all good. So as Sam gets up to speed. So yes. This karting event.
You're going to have to put the explicit warning on now, but my internet is royally fucked. I don't know why it's being so bad, but yeah, it is.
We're up to 10 second delay now. Fantastic.
No, we're not.
It's just as well we're not racing tonight, Sean, because I would be absolutely terrible.
So, yeah, be the same as normal. We'd be fine.
Fantastic.
Right.
Okay, so, Monty. Yes, karting event. So a couple of weeks ago, a load of people, actually about 74 people, came to Rye House Kart Raceway to take part in this year's Racing Awareness for Charity karting event. Now, this year, we were Racing Awareness for the National Autistic Society, and I was very pleased to see that 19 teams had entered into the 90-minute endurance karting race that was being hosted at Rye House. The rules were quite simple. They didn't need to bring their karts. They didn't even need to bring their own equipment. Rye House was supplying the karts. These were four-stroke twin 160cc four-stroke engines. So that's essentially 320cc's combined, because you had one on your left, one on your right. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And then they were also supplying the helmets and the suits, and it was fantastic to see the caliber of the entries who had joined, because there were quite a few corporate entities there, you know, colleagues from work who were banding together, putting a team in. And then we also had a lot of engineers and professional racing drivers there as well. There were two simple targets. One was to win the race and get the nice trophy, which was on grabs for the top three. But there was also a secondary challenge, which was with regards to the team who could fundraise the most for the event would get to start from pole position. So the event had a GoFundMe at all. So the event had a Just Giving page set up for each team to get their fans, their friends, their family to go and donate towards. This was great fun from an administration point of view to work out what donations were going to which team, but in the end we did manage to work out that it was K1 Stars was the name of the team who had raised the most.
If K1 Stars... If only one of their drivers were in this chat.
Indeed, indeed. Because you see, guys, K1 Stars is the essentially the coaching group from Rye House. So not only did they put this whole event on for us, not only did they kindly agree to donate 20% of each of the entry fees towards the charity as well, but their own staff members managed to fundraise the most, raising, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, I believe it was £360 or something around that mark, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, £360 we raised, with help from parents of drivers and, customers, basically. It was our customers, to be totally honest, and friends and family that helped us raise all that, so thank you to them.
No, absolutely. A huge thank you to everyone, for not only to those within K1 Stars, but actually to everyone who bothered to donate, because my target was to raise £500 for the charity through this event. Absolutely obliterated that target. And as of today, the fundraising is now at £1,353. So absolutely obliterated that target. That's going to help so many people. Good job, mate. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's going to help so many people who rely on the National Autistic Society's services to get the best out of themselves, to help get them through, to get through life, to get through education, to help them at work and live the life that they want to, and ensure that they have the right tools in place to get the best out of themselves there. So it's gone to such a good cause, and I was really over the moon to see so many people physically turn up to help join and support this cause. There was a side challenge as well with regards to their team names. I told people to get as creative as they could. Everyone knows I love a good innuendo, and good grief, did people not disappoint. We had everything ranging from the PFOWs to Team 69 to Ranlube Racing, and then my favourite one who won the whole race, and to be fair, I didn't get it when I was reading it out I read it out, said it out loud. To me, it was just two words, but no, pro and the second word lapse. Say it together, prolapse racing. So not only were we announcing who the winner was, but I was almost falling on the floor laughing my head off at the best name, which I had not heard of. It even twigged about, so... No, thoroughly deserved. Prolapse Racing, who incidentally were a bunch of McLaren engineers. So very good humour, McLaren guys. I very much approve of this. They won the whole event themselves. K1 Stars, who came second, and Wrong Turn Racing, who came third, all managed to complete the race with 122 laps.
Well, so did fourth place.
And so did fourth place, yes. Nissan Pro Pilots, correct. It was a great day out, lots of people coming together, and based on the feedback that I've had from everyone so far, I'm going to try my very best to turn this into an annual event, because it's helping a lot of people, it's for a good cause, and it seems to have been very popular as well.
And the weather was alright too.
Yeah, it was weather. We got really lucky with the weather, considering when it was, middle of October, it was...
Yes.
Bright sunshine. It was really nice and warm.
Well, you remember, Sam, you were saying the weather the day before was awful.
Absolutely. It was.
Honestly, it was absolutely abysmal. It was so heavy.
You could look in the grass and it was waterlogged. So every time a car put a wheel on the grass, it brought out a puddle onto the road. And then that was it for the next few laps. Everyone would just kind of half skid off because they hit that puddle as well themselves. So it was really good fun. Had a lot to consider there, but really, really physical, a lot more physical than I was expecting. So that's that new surfacing that Rye House have done. There's a lot more grip than I remember when I last raced there. So really good to see.
There is.
I have to give a shout out though to Nick Atkinson. He was one of the drivers, one of the team members. Let's try that one again. He was one of the entrants for the race. He was in there with his own team. I found out a couple of days later that he broke his rib. So presumably presumably over one of those sausage curbs that Rye House have around there. He didn't even realise this at the time. It was just he went to bed the day afterwards and was a bit winded by that. So, but no, so thank you so much for being such a trooper,
you know,
for carrying on and doing the whole thing.
You know what warning he should have got for that?
And go on. Sausage abuse. That's my black flag. But no, jokes aside, I couldn't have done this without all of Rye House's support. I'm in their debt to how much they've been able to support on this one and for putting together such a wonderfully organised event. So a big thank you to you.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Always, as always. And it was really, really good fun as well. I actually came up with that Super 90 format that we did. That's one of my products. But I've actually never been able to drive in one.
Always
on a day. Yeah, that was the first time I'd actually driven in one because they're always on a day that I'm working. So I'm normally the race director. It's a good length race. It's not too long. It's, short, sharp, but endurance style. Very, very enjoyable and really competitive, but all good-natured competitive and good fun. Yeah, really good.
We'll do more of the same next year then. Thank you so
much. Definitely.
Yay. Incidentally, though, guys, sorry, Sean, cheeky plug in here. So if anyone wants to see pictures from the event, if you go into Instagram and look out for @RacingMont, that's my esports channel. So this will probably be the last year that I run the event through JJ Racing. As I've done racing awareness for a few years now, I'll probably turn this into something more proper for next year. But for the sake of this year's event, you will find it all on @RacingMont on Instagram. And there'll be pictures for there for you guys to enjoy on the event where you can see all the top racing and banditry moments of the day.
Let's also not forget the most important part, which is that Stealthy Automotive got second and third.
And I had to have a very, very interesting conversation with my clearly far too young teammates about why prolapse racing was funny.
Anyway. Right, let's go on to topic number three, shall we?
They'll understand, Sam. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's only something which old people get, so, yeah.
Topic number three. We're going to move on to the world of Formula One next. This is actually something from the start of the month. Andretti have been cleared by the FIA to race in Formula One. Will it happen? Discuss.
Well, so we should try and give a little bit of context of what this means. So
yes,
the FIA have said yes, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily in. Because now F1 has to say yes, which is the bigger problem, arguably.
It's not arguably, it is. 100%.
Well, I mean, clearly it is because they're not in yet. But it's just... It's frustrating, I think, as a fan, that you think, yeah, this new team's coming in. That's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to having another two cars on the grid, 22 cars like it should be. And then actually all the teams are like, well, we're not sure if we want it. And I kind of understand from a sort of business point of view and a commercial point of view why they might not. But surely, like for the good of the sport, they should be... wanting it. More competition is a good thing. It's always going to be a good thing.
There's always twos and fros. I mean, having another team in the sport will give more seats for drivers, give, in theory, more chance of competition in the race, more talking points, more exposure, all those good things. However, it will also, you've alluded to, Sam, take away from the prize pot. And that's the big spinner, isn't it, in Formula One, which is the top 10 teams only get money.
That's the problem.
And, basically, they don't want to let go of their free lunch.
It's...
Yes, because at some point, one of them will finish 11th and won't get that prize money. But maybe you should just restructure how it works for that anyway, because it probably does need that.
But the F1 team still won't enjoy that, because it means that they're going to lose part of that prize money anyway. Even if they restructured yeah. it to go down to P11, the prize is essentially diluted. And because there's millions and millions and millions of pounds involved, I can understand why they're so vocal. I don't like it, but I can understand why they're so vocal, because I think James Vowles, he had...
Oh.
As a lower ranked team, they are reliant on the prize. He's reliant on being able to... Rather, he is dependent on that kind of money, on being able to pay the 500 employees at the factory who all have their own lives, who all have their own factory, who all have their own mortgages and stuff. You could almost argue in the back, outside of F1, it really does show what a debt-ridden world we live in at the moment when we're having to consider all these kind of things. But I see no issues with an F1 team coming in, provided that they add value to the show, provided that they add value to the prize pot, that they add value to the whole product. They're going to be coming in with their own audience, with their own market, with their own sponsors. There's a chance there for other businesses to get involved who may not be aware of what Formula One is. And I mean, as a circus, for a better word, Formula One is desperate to crack the American market this time. Right, why else would they have free racing? Yep, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, they've put three races into America now. They've really Americanified the show in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Personally, I've gone completely off it now because of that, because yep. it doesn't feel like a natural engineering contest anymore, but whatever. And to me, I see no reason why Andretti can't join, provided that they bring something to the show. I think the days we romanticise about what F1 was like in the 70s, what it was like in the early 90s when there was, 40 cars?
Oh, it was abysmal.
And 14 pre-qualifiers. I mean, yeah, it was great to look at, but at the same time, most of them were chances.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't actually adding anything to F1. They were making it look like a mockery because, I mean, you had like Eurobrun, who were turning up and purposely not pre-qualifying because it was cheaper to run the car that way rather than just to qualify for the race, languish around at the back. That's not what racing is all about. So long as Andretti doesn't pull a fast one like that, I don't see why they can't come into F1. Well,
there's 2 points there. Number one, second mention of the day for Minardi. When you consider them to their 90s rivals and smaller teams like that, they were a big boy.
Well, Minardi used to finish 6th, 7th or 8th in the championship in the early 90s. It was only once they all died off that suddenly they became the back marker. Yeah. So,
my second point is the recurring defending argument, which I absolutely do not think is relevant, is the history of the last time F1 allowed, apart from Haas, the three teams in 2010, the absolute shafting they got. And obviously they all bowed out within a few years.
That's not a good comparison.
No, it's not. It's not at all. Their budget cap didn't exist. They were brought in under the proviso of there being a budget cap, which never happened.
Exactly. So it was really unfair for all of those teams because, you're right, they got shafted. So it would be so unfair for anyone to use that as a comparison because... Yeah, that's not fair at all.
Also,
Andretti's is probably a fairer comparison.
Yeah, but that, they did it a different way. But the thing is, Andretti are a bigger team, I would say, than possibly all four of those teams combined.
Agreed. And they're bringing in the manufacturer, which is a key difference as well. They're not going down a customer engine route.
Well,
well,
they say that. They've got Cadillac stickers on it.
There's the rumours, the FIA, I think, have said that they would want, if they're going to come in like that, that they would then want Cadillac to come in with an engine. But they realise that that isn't going to be ready by when Andretti joins. So that will probably be 2026 at the earliest. Maybe even after that, realistically.
It'll be a Renault engine. I guarantee it.
I think you're right. It'll probably be a Renault engine. Certainly the first few years that Andretti were on the grid, I think that's what.
And worst case scenario, Renault probably don't want to be in F1 forever. It wouldn't shock me if they sold their IP.
Yeah, because they couldn't. And Renault might just become Cadillac engines.
The one thing I don't like about this whole discussion, not the specific discussion, but the whole situation, is that the F1 teams are getting to make the call at the moment.
I don't think it's the wrong way around.
Yeah, it's basically the staff members telling the bosses how to do their job, which is a bit... Mm. To me, yes, it's nice that the FIA have given it their blessing, but at the end of the day, they're a governing body. They're not the one who runs the show. You know, if we think of this like in UK motorsport, okay, that would be essentially like a team going to MSUK, the governing body for all club-level motorsports in the UK, and saying, oh, can we join BTCC? Oh, yeah, go on, please, go ahead. No, that's not how it works. MSUK put the rules and say your cars must do X, Y, and Z and conform to these criteria. You've got to go through BTCC, i.e. the promoter, the show, the host, and enter through them.
Yes, but it's worse than that, because in that comparison, that would basically be saying that the bigger teams in karting won't let privateers join in.
Exactly. That's exactly what we're talking about here. But it should be no different, because as far as I'm concerned, Andretti should be making this application to the guys who run F1 now. So whoever has taken over from Bernie Eccleston, those are the guys that should be judging this and going, okay, we like you, or no, you're not going to add something to this show. Thank you, but goodbye.
I disagree.
Other teams...
Yeah. No, I disagree. I think it should be... They've got the FIAs. Yes, this team is... good enough to, it has the resources or whatever else to join. They meet the criteria. They should now just have to pay an entry fee. And in my opinion, if they crash and burn, that's their problem.
FIA should be there to advise, but they shouldn't be able to have a call because they're the governing body. They should be there to say yes, that they conform to our rules.
Yeah,
that's
so,
it.
So then exactly should, that. But you shouldn't. You should have then just an entry fee, and off you go.
If they can build a legal car, then they should be able to race it, basically, is what we're saying here.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
And I think they will be able to. They've shown that they don't necessarily build their race cars in the States, but they race in virtually every series, let's face it, certainly with single-seaters and things. They've got drivers all the way down the single-seater ladder in America. They've been doing Formula E as well and things like that. So
yeah, that's a crucial point, actually, because no one can really accuse them of just being an Americanized team, because they do Formula E, and that is predominantly European.
And if you talk about awful, they've also been doing Extreme E,
which is
that 4x4 thing, which is really abysmal. But but they've shown with that they can do global racing. And actually, there's an interesting thing that I thought I heard the other day, so whenever you hear about Andretti in like IndyCar, they're often referred to as Andretti Autosport.
Oh, they've rebranded, haven't they?
Yes. The Formula E team is Andretti International.
I thought it was Andretti Global.
One of them. Something like that.
Something stupid.
Words to that effect. But I thought that was quite interesting that they're already going down that route, that's going to be kind of the worldwide team. And then you have your national team working in things like IndyCar to back up the internationals when they need it, but primarily run on that.
That makes sense. Have your subsidiaries. Otherwise, the whole thing falls to pieces. If one part goes, the rest of it goes as well. So, yeah, run them as their own entities.
No different really to how McLaren are doing it with IndyCar or really how Ferrari are doing it with Le Mans and stuff as well, aren't they? So
exactly.
The car is technically run by AF Corsa, remember? So
unfortunately, gents, we've run out of time on this one.
No.
Let's see. What else happened? Oh yeah, also Max Verstappen won the championship.
Yeah.
Big deal.
It's been known since about April, so if anyone's...
That's such a surprise. I was not expecting him to win it this year.
If anyone is surprised genuinely, then hello. otherwise, that's about it, I think. thank you very much to Monty and Sam for joining me.
The pleasure, as always, thank is all you. Yours, Sean.
Follow us at Stealthy Auto on social media, and we'll be back soon. Happy Halloween, take care, and goodbye.
Goodbye.